Welcome and thank you for standing by. All participants will be in a listen-only mode for the duration of today's presentation. This conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. At the end of this presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star, then one. I will now like to turn the conference over to Susan Buchanan. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Karen. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the announcement of NOAA's U.S. Spring Outlook and Flood Risk. You can find a news release and maps at noaa.gov. The U.S. Spring Outlook looks forward, covering 3 months at the spring flood risk and outlooks for drought, temperature, and precipitation. NOAA produces seasonal outlooks to help communities prepare for what's likely to come in the next few months and to minimize weather's impacts on lives and livelihoods. Empowering people with information they need to take action and protect life and property is key to NOAA's effort to building a weather-ready nation. Today on the line, we have three NOAA experts to talk about the spring outlook. First, John Gottschalk will discuss the outlooks for drought, temperature, and precipitation. John's title is Chief of the Operational Prediction Branch at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, and you spell John, J-O-N. And Tom Graziano will deliver the spring flood risk today from the National Water Center in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Tom is the Acting Director of the National Water Center. And we also have Rob Hartman. He will provide additional details about the current situation with drought in California and what's expected this spring. Rob is the hydrologist in charge of NOAA's California-Nevada River Forecast Center in Sacramento. And with that, I'll turn the call over to John.
Thanks, Susan. Over the past autumn and winter months, a near-record El Nino event was observed as equatorial Pacific Ocean temperature departures from normal were nearly as large as the strong 1997-1990 El Nino event. These El Nino conditions resulted in both worldwide and U.S. impacts during the past winter. El Nino contributed in part to a milder than average winter across nearly all of the continental United States and Alaska. Areas across the northern tier of the U.S. observed 3-month average temperatures 5 degrees above normal in many areas and as high as 8 degrees above normal in some locations. Cold air outbreaks were considerably less frequent and of shorter duration than a typical winter. There was a large range in precipitation during the past winter. Many areas across the continental United States received above-average precipitation, with some of the largest departures from normal evident in the lower and central Mississippi Valley, Tennessee Valley, Southeast, Northern California, and the Pacific Northwest. A critical regional omission to the listed areas, however, was Southern California and the Southwest U.S., where despite strong El Nino conditions, below average precipitation and little drought relief was observed during the winter. Although El Nino conditions are forecast to weaken over the spring months, it remains a substantial climate factor along with its antecedent winter impacts for the spring outlook. In summarizing the drought outlook, drought is expected to persist in central and southern California, southwest Nevada and western Arizona, northwest Montana and Hawaii through the month of June. Drought is also forecast to develop for remaining areas of Hawaii consistent with the ongoing El Nino conditions, as well as for most of Arizona and western New Mexico, where wintertime precipitation was substantially below normal. However, drought improvement or removal is favored for Northern California, Northwest Nevada, and Southeast Oregon, where significant wintertime precipitation brought near to above normal mountain snowpack and increased reservoir levels. Smaller areas of the central and northern Rockies, south central high plains, and northern Great Plains also have elevated odds for drought improvement or removal through June. Now to the temperature and precipitation outlook. For the next 3 months, above average temperatures are favored for most of the western continental United States, the northern plains, the eastern one-third of the continental United States, and for all of Alaska. Below normal temperatures are most likely for a small region that includes parts of Texas and Oklahoma. For precipitation, odds favor drier than average conditions for parts of the Pacific Northwest, southern Alaska Panhandle, and western Great Lakes. Above average precipitation is most likely for an area stretching from central California eastward across portions of the Rocky Southwest, southern plains, Gulf Coast, and southeast. Hawaii is favored to be warmer and drier than average this spring. At this point, I will turn the call over to Tom Graziano to talk about the spring flood risk.
Thanks, John. This Sunday, March 20th, is the beginning of astronomical spring. And with spring often comes rain and an elevated risk of flooding. This year, we've already seen the devastation that flooding can cause, with early spring rain fueled by El Nino drenching areas of Louisiana, eastern Texas, Mississippi, and Arkansas. During the past 10 days, heavy rainfall of 12 to locally 20 inches resulted in widespread moderate to major flooding across much of eastern Texas, Louisiana, southern Arkansas, and parts of Mississippi. While the majority of rivers in eastern Texas, southern Arkansas, and Mississippi have crested or will crest soon, several areas within Louisiana continue to rise as floodwaters work their way through the river systems. Major river flooding will likely persist into next week for parts of Louisiana, especially on the lower Sabine, Ouachita, Boof, and Red Rivers. Another low pressure system migrating eastward along the Gulf Coast will bring additional shower activity and a few thunderstorms from southern Louisiana to the Florida Panhandle through Saturday. However, this additional rainfall associated with the system should not have a significant impact on the ongoing river flood situation. Our concerns are with the victims of this flooding, as many work to recover and some remain in desperate flood situations. Yet we know the situation would have been much worse without the accurate flood predictions provided by our forecasters, who were briefing local decision makers more than a week in advance as we saw this flood potential develop. Our forecasters allowed communities to pre-position people and resources and plan for evacuations in order to protect life and property. The good news is that once the ongoing river flooding recedes, the risk for additional widespread major flooding is low across the country for the remainder of the spring. And because of a mild winter and little snow accumulation, the western half of the country, upper Midwest, the middle Atlantic, and northeast all have a low risk of river flooding, which is typically enhanced by snowmelt. That said, heavy rainfall at any time can cause local or regional flooding, even in places where the risk is currently considered low. Heavy rainfall during the winter and early March has elevated the risk of moderate flooding along parts of the Mississippi and Missouri River basins from Iowa to Louisiana, and in eastern Texas and along the southeastern coastal plain. Large parts of surrounding regions have a risk of minor flooding, and recent heavy rains will lead to minor to moderate flooding in Wisconsin and Iowa. Portions of Maine and Nevada have a risk of minor flooding due to above normal snowpack in these areas, with forecasts for additional snowfall. NOAA hydrologists determine the spring flood risk based upon environmental intelligence collected across the country, including late summer and fall precipitation, frost depth, soil saturation levels, stream flows, snowpack, temperatures, and the rate of snowmelt. This national assessment is a compilation of local threats evaluated by National Weather Service field office personnel throughout the country. It floods somewhere in the United States nearly every day of the year. Flooding is the leading cause of severe weather-related deaths in the U.S., claiming on average nearly 100 lives per year. More than half of those flood-related deaths occur in vehicles. Take NOAA's advice. When approaching a water-covered roadway, turn around, don't drown. Roadway flooding can be deceptively deep, and in some cases, the road can be entirely washed away. Water is a powerful force. It's also a life force upon which we all depend. On the 22nd of March, we will join the United Nations to celebrate World Water Day with the theme of Better Water, Better Jobs. While NOAA forecasts water to help the nation prepare for flooding and drought, our hydrology teams across the country and at the National Water Center work every day to provide water intelligence which informs decisions related to planning, preparedness, and response activities that sustain life and support millions of jobs. And we are building on our capabilities. We are pleased to announce that in July of this year, we'll launch the first ever national water model run on NOAA's powerful new supercomputers. This new water prediction model will simultaneously model the nation's entire river network and complement our current flow forecast at 4,000 U.S. Geological Survey stream gauge locations with additional guidance for 2.7 million stream reaches nationwide. The National Water Model will provide forecasts for a number of additional water-related parameters like soil moisture, evapotranspiration, snow water equivalent, and runoff. While much validation and continued development of this new modeling capability remains to be done, it shows tremendous promise for the future of NOAA water prediction. You'll be hearing more about the new National Water Model in the coming months. That concludes my remarks, and now I'll turn it over to Rob Hartman to discuss California in more detail.
Thank you, Tom. It's really nice to be able to talk about water resources a little bit on this call, and given all the attention that California has received over the last few years with its continued drought, I think this is an appropriate thing to do. So thank you for this opportunity. The water resources conditions in California are more favorable than they've been since 2011. The last 2 weeks have really gone a long ways towards brightening that picture with some significant winter storms that have arrived primarily to Northern California over that period. So to accurately paint the picture for future water availability, you really need to know what's expected in terms of the spring snowmelt volumes, as well as how much water is stored in the reservoir system. So we'll look at both of those briefly. In general, conditions are far better in the northern half of the state than in the southern. As John Gottschalk indicated in his remarks earlier, as you would expect in a strong El Nino environment as we've had this winter, we would expect above normal precipitation in Southern California and perhaps a little bit above normal in Northern California. And that really hasn't turned out to be the case, with Southern California really lagging in its rainfall throughout the winter period. But Northern California has benefited from the system and has been really pretty good. The snowmelt volume forecasts are going to follow this pattern, with near normal projections for April-July runoff, really from about Yosemite National Park or the Merced drainage up to the north, and then south of there, starting with the upper San Joaquin and the Kings River Basin, we're expecting below normal volumes. When we then look at the reservoir storage, it has a similar pattern, principally because the winter rainfall has been much heavier to the north, but the line of demarcation for near normal to below normal is a little bit north of where it is for the water supply volumes, with the American system around the latitude of Sacramento kind of drawing the line for where reservoir storage is normal or slightly above normal, and south of there where it's below normal to well below normal. So when you combine those two things together, we're really seeing improved drought conditions, water supply and water availability conditions in the northern half of the state, and a continuation of drier or poorer conditions in the southern half of the state. And with respect then to the drought in general, things are improved in the north, not so much improved to the south. There's been a lot of discussion and speculation about what it would take to end the drought in California. Over the last 4 years, we've dug a very deep hole, missing in total between 1 and 2 years of precipitation. And there's been substantial groundwater pumping overdraft throughout that period that's really been quite a hit on the overall environment. This year's rainfall certainly doesn't rise to the level of fully ameliorating the California drought, although the conditions are certainly easing in the northern half of the state, but they're every bit as severe as they have been in the southern portions. Getting back to the snowmelt flood outlook, in California and Nevada, we're not looking for any unusual snowmelt flooding during the spring, although as Tom indicated earlier, there's a potential for some minor spring snowmelt flooding along the Humboldt River in Nevada. And that concludes my remarks, and I'll turn it back over to you, Susan, for questions and answers.
Thank you, Rob. And before we take questions, I'd like to introduce the other speakers who are on the line to assist with specific questions. We have Deke Arndt. He's from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, and he's on the line to assist with questions about climate and climate statistics. We also have Brad Rippey. He's a meteorologist at USDA, and he will assist with any of your questions related to agriculture. And also on the line, we have a hydrologist from each of our 13 river forecast centers in case we have very specific local questions that they have the expertise to answer. And with that, Karen, we'll go ahead and open it up to questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. Again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then one, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. One moment for your first question. Our first question comes from Seth Borenstein of the Associated Press. Sir, your line is open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. Just to put the flood outlook, spring flood outlook in historical perspective, if you don't mind, and forgive me if I may have missed this, I spaced out a moment or two. In the last 20, 30 years, going back to the Mississippi floods of 92, where would this be? Would this be one of the lesser spring flood risks? Around the middle, high, is there a historical analog? I guess that might be for Tom or maybe John.
Yes, thanks for your question. This is Tom Graziano. The historic flooding that you're referring to back in the Midwest United States back in 1993, that was widespread, prolonged for several weeks and devastating. And in fact, we are not forecasting at this point that type of activity this spring. We did have the significant flooding around Christmas time in the lower middle and Mississippi. And again, we're seeing significant flooding in eastern Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Mississippi at this time. So we've had a couple of significant events. The ongoing event is quite significant. We still got a lot of people who are either underwater or, with major flooding going on. But we don't anticipate the type of 93 type event during the next 3 months.
I guess, yeah. I didn't mean to say you were anticipating a 93 event.
Okay.
I'm just looking for sort of an analog. I mean, there are years where there's almost no flooding, like a couple, 3 years ago. This is obviously somewhere in between. Is there a good analog year or not really?
One doesn't necessarily come to mind, but I would call your attention to our spring outlook map, which does show a fairly broad area of minor risk and a fairly broad area of moderate risk. And some of that, in fact, as you know, is reflective of what's going on now. But, you know, the threat over the eastern half of the country is fairly significant. So.
And, Seth, this is Susan. What we do when we put historical perspective on seasons or specific events, that happens at the National Centers for Environmental Information where Deke is, and they would do that after they would categorize it after the season. So,
yeah, but that doesn't help someone prepare. saying, hey, this is going to be somewhat similar to 2003 or whatever year you choose. I mean, that, some people have sort of their historic perspective in advance. So that's just what I was looking for. No problem.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brian Sullivan. So your line is open from Bloomberg News.
Hi, thank you. This is for Rob. Rob, given that the El Nino pattern didn't quite work out the way, past have with the precipitation coming in the northern part of the state, but did it work out better because that's where a lot of your big reservoirs were? I mean, did this unusual pattern just turn out to be a good thing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brian. And the answer from my perspective is yes. The majority of the storage reservoirs are in Northern California, and those reservoirs, prior to this winter,
were at desperately low levels. Some of the San Joaquin drainage are still very low, but if we had our choice from a water resources perspective of where to get the precipitation, it's far better to get it in the north. So the answer to your question is yes.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sandin Totten of Southern California Public Radio.
Hi, thanks so much. Always fascinating to hear this stuff. My question is two-part. One, first of all, when we talk about how this El Nino sort of surprised us, especially in California, by going more to the north, less to the south, I'm wondering if you've heard any theories that you think are interesting or worth checking out about why that might have happened. And two, as El Nino continues to fade through the spring, does it have any effect on summer weather like it does and spring weather like it does on winter weather? Should we expect a hot summer or a cool summer because of it in California and the rest of the country?
This is John Gottschalk from the Climate Prediction Center. I'll take that question. With respect to your first point, not entirely surprised us. There was many areas across parts of the country that did receive the El Nino impacts that we were anticipating with respect to both temperature and precipitation, mainly in parts of central and northern California as well as the southeast. But you're correct about the expectations for above-average precipitation season for Southern California and the southwest especially as well. There's a number of different theories that are going around. One of the things, in general, the storm track was shifted further north than expected. During the month of December, most of the storms went in the Pacific Northwest, which was somewhat unusual for an El Nino. Typically, those areas are typically drier than average. There's a number of theories that researchers basically would have to be done to really quantify that. But there's a few things that are going on. One, usually during strong El Ninos, variability or changes within the season, what we call interseasonal variability, is awesome. Usually shut down or is more limited, and so you tend to generate the El Nino impacts more persistently, more aggressively across the Pacific. When you have more interseasonal type variations. Meaning changes in the jet stream within the over a period of weeks as opposed to the season, you tend to get less of the El Nino sort of impact. And so that's one theory that we have going on, as well as some of the characteristics in the deeper tropics, such as the enhanced rainfall across parts of the central and eastern Pacific this year, were a little further to the north and west than what we saw during the 1997-98 event, in which we had stronger impacts across the southern tier of the U.S., particularly in the southwest and across southern California. So these are some of the issues that the research community is looking into to try to identify more clearly how this year played out differently from other El Nino events. It's very important to keep in mind two things also, is that every El Nino event is different, and also our forecasts are probabilistic, such that we had a 60% chance of above-average precipitation, meaning there was non-negligible odds for near-normal and below-normal as well. And to go to your second question briefly, as we move towards the summer, spring and summer months, we are generally heading towards more El Niño neutral conditions, and so we'll be timing off some of the El Niño impacts. There's still an impact in the spring outlook for April, May, and June, but as we get towards the summer months, the impacts for the not only will the El Niño weaken, also impacts typically during the summer months with any phase of ENSO are typically less. So we don't anticipate, as we get into the summer months, much of an impact as we start to have this transition.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Christopher Doering of a USSA. So your line is open.
Yes. Hi, this is Christopher Doering with USA Today. I just wanted to ask Mr. Rippey if I could, looking at Iowa and the neighboring Corn Belt states, how you're seeing things look for the upcoming planting season, which is rapidly approaching. It looks like pretty much equal chance looking at Iowa of precipitation, both high and low, and same on the temperature side of things, and a small chance of flooding. But just wanted to kind of what you're seeing for that that area.
Hi, Chris. This is Brad. I want to make sure you can hear me before I start.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, great.
You.
Yeah, so looking at the Climate Prediction Center and their outlooks heading into the spring and perhaps a little beyond, there's still a lot of warmth in the forecast. I mean, we've seen that. We had a record warm winter for the contiguous U.S., and we're seeing that continued forecast for a lot of warmth, particularly across the northern part of the United States and the west. So I think, you know, there may be some cool outbreaks from time to time, but the general spring outlook is for a warm weather pattern for your neck of the woods, for the upper Midwest. And as others have mentioned, some of the El Nino impacts tend to wane the deeper you get into the year. So by the time you get to the end of the spring, you really don't have an El Nino signal anymore to hang your hat on in terms of the rainfall forecast. Now, of course, Iowa did have a very, very wet start to the winter with that record-setting rainfall that fell back in December. And some of that moisture is still in the system, in the subsoil. In terms of planting, it really depends on system-to-system events as we move out from here. If we get a big storm system like the one that was spinning up over Wisconsin yesterday, that in itself can set back. That's an episodic event that we really can't look at more than a couple of weeks ahead of time. So it's a little early to be talking too much about spring planting, other than the fact that we do have still some significant subsoil moisture from the earlier wetness.
So at this point, I mean, things look pretty good, would you say? And then it's just kind of a wait and see, depending on how storms develop in the next few weeks and months?
I think that's an accurate way to say it. You know, certainly we're not nearly as wet this point in the season as we've seen in several other recent years, like 2008, 2011 for the upper Midwest. The focus on the spring flooding seems to be further south and east than Iowa itself. So it really is going to be looking at those episodic storms from here on out to see how the spring planting plays out in the upper Midwest.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. As a reminder, please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question at this time. Our next question comes from Michelle Apon of ABC 10 Sacramento. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi, good morning. My question is for Rob Hartman. He kind of touched upon this about maybe 10 minutes ago. He was talking about the last 4 years and we're missing a lot of precipitation, and then we did get some rain for this year, and you were saying that are we ever going to get out of this drought and how long it would take? Can you kind of expand on that?
Sure. Thanks for the question. It's going to take multiple years, although there are certainly areas, you know, within the state that'll be, you know, more or less ameliorated this winter. Statewide, it's going to take a while. If you look at, you know, the accumulated rainfall statewide over the last 4 years, you know, prior to this year, we were missing between 1 and 2 years of rainfall, and so that has to be made up in some fashion. And we're seeing that by virtue of looking at our reservoir systems, which, you know, south of Sacramento are in pretty bad shape. And then, as I also mentioned, there's been, you know, significant groundwater pumping to offset the surface water deficit over this last 4 years as well. And that's really sustainable in the long run. So I think that some of the initial estimates by folks were that we would need something on the order of at least 150% of normal precipitation during the winter statewide to be able to really ease the drought in a meaningful fashion. And, you know, we've come close to that in some areas, but, you know, certainly not everywhere, and in some other places where, you know, we've had below normal precipitation this winter that just makes the hole a little bit deeper. And for folks in the San Joaquin drainage, you know, and south of Sacramento, the reservoir systems there are really pretty low, and even with, you know, better than normal or normal spring snowmelt, you know, north of Yosemite, you know, the water availability is not going to be all that great. So better in some places, not all that much better in others. But, you know, the state will declare when the drought's over. That's not something that NOAA does, and I don't see that coming anytime soon.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sarah Hammond of Arizona Public Media. Ma'am, your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning. This is for one of the river experts, please. Given the history of the Rockies and the desert southwest climate-wise and the expectations of El Nino, what is the status of and the outlook for the Colorado River Basin?
We're going to hand that one off to Michelle Stokes. She's the hydrologist in charge at the Colorado Basin River Forecast Center. Michelle?
Hi. I'm sorry. I'm not quite sure what you're looking for in your question. Can you repeat the question?
Certainly. It's what is the status of the Colorado River Basin, and what are we expecting given what's happened over the past years and few months?
Okay. So we're still in a drought in the Colorado Basin. Water supply for this year is near normal to below normal in the upper basin and in the lower basin. And that's pretty much the status for right now. So still pretty grim, I guess, for the Colorado Basin in general.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Annette Petraccioni of New Jersey 101.5. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for doing this today. I was wondering if you could give more specifics about the New Jersey area, tri-state area, in terms of the spring outlook for rain and also temperature. We have had some very unseasonably warm days recently, and it's been a rather odd winter. So I was wondering how the spring might shape up for New Jersey. Thanks so much.
Yes, thanks for the question. This is John Gottschalk from the Climate Prediction Center. Just to reiterate the forecast for your region, during the April, May, June period, as well as for the month of April, we are favoring above normal temperatures to continue. We can't provide specific day-to-day information over the course of the season, but right now the continued El Nino impact during the first part of the spring, mainly April time period, does favor above normal temperatures in your area. With respect to precipitation and also above average Atlantic Ocean temperatures, I forgot to mention as well, contribute to the forecast. With respect to precipitation for your specific area, we are calling for equal chances of one of the any three categories, above, near, or below normal precipitation, because the climate signals are weaker for precipitation. And the El Nino impact is mainly felt further to the south, across parts of the southeast. So I hope that answers your question a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I to follow, and I know this is probably really difficult to predict, but based on the fact that there's going to be warmer than usual temperatures, might it be possible that we can start spring planting a little earlier?
Well, I think I might turn that over to Brad Reppy, perhaps, if he would like to answer that.
Sure, thank you.
Sure, yeah, I would certainly, despite the overall outlook for above normal temperatures through the spring period, I would be very cautionary to anyone attempting to plant early, and the reason is that you can still have these episodic freezes or cold outbreaks within an overall mild regime. So you really have to still, I think, focus on these typical last frost dates, which for much of the northern mid-Atlantic is mid to late April. You're still at a pretty decent risk, about a 50-50 risk of having a frost after those particular dates. And they do vary regionally and locally. But despite the warm spring, certainly I don't think people should be too anxious to plant those really tender crops or vegetation, because you can get zapped pretty easily, even an overall warm regime.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Patricia Kitchen of Newsday, New York. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi. Thanks very much, everyone, for being there. I wanted to ask Tom a couple of questions about flood risk. Is this related mostly to streams and rivers when you talk about flood risk? Yeah.
Yes, this is Tom. Yes, right. It is. This is based upon our longer-range 90-day projections that
right.
we make over the country. So that's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So, because Long Island, we're not known for rivers here. So,
yeah.
But you had mentioned too that that a flood could occur, you know, at any point, right? A heavy rainfall. Could you talk a little bit about that for an area like ours that, you know, where flooding isn't such a big risk? Coastal
right.
flooding is certainly far more so, but could you just talk a little bit about for a region like ours?
Sure. The type of flooding that you're going to experience, it's not really necessarily going to be riverine, but more of the flash variety.
Right.
Associated
yeah.
with, you know, any kind of heavy thunderstorm, frontal passage, heavy thunderstorm complex, you know, deep convection in the atmosphere, which is pretty efficient at generating heavy rainfall. So if you have a situation with a, you know, a prolonged period of heavy rainfall associated with that kind of event, then you're certainly at risk for flooding. So while we provide a general characterization of what we see the risk over the next 30 days, one of the caveats that I articulated is that, you know, heavy rainfall can produce flooding at any time in any location, and that's usually what it's associated with, sort of a, you know, basically, you know, an extratropical cyclone or even a tropical cyclone as we get later into the spring and into the summer, you know, producing, you know, a copious amount of rainfall over a small area.
Sure. Okay, great. Thank you.
And I would, this is John Gottschalk at CPC, I would add that from a predictability point of view, very hard to predict more than, say, a week in advance, potentially areas of flash flooding. Our seasonal and monthly outlooks are more geared towards regime or overall patterns
sure.
that we can expect over the seasonal and monthly period.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sherry Pugh of NBC News. Ma'am, your line is open. Please check your mute function. Again, our next question comes from Sherry Pugh of NBC News. Your line is open.
I apologize. I had the phone on mute ahead of time. I wanted to ask about the spring flood risk, specifically the moderate flooding risk in the southeast. I wanted to see what ingredients were going into that forecast. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. This is Tom Graziano. I'm going to turn that over to our regional expert at the Southeast River Forecast Center, and his name is Todd Hamill. Todd, take it away.
Yes. You know, we continue to have the ground is still somewhat saturated. Fortunately, in the last month, most of the Southeast has been a little bit drier than normal, so stream flows remain near or above normal just because of all the rainfall we had early in December and then again in February. We still have, due to the El Nino conditions continuing, we still have the potential for heavy rainfall over much of that area, especially if it falls in the middle to the bottom of the, say, North Carolina, the Piedmont area of North Carolina, South Carolina, all through those areas. So the potential is still there, although it's not as dire as it was early in the period. So things are looking better, but we're still concerned through the month of April as the potential for heavier rainfall due to the El Nino potential is there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Christine Kohler of WCBD-TV, Charleston, South Carolina. Your line is now open.
Yeah, and it's a fairly similar question to the last one. Of course, here in South Carolina, we had the extensive flooding back in October, and we've had a fairly active winter here across that area that experienced the flooding. We still have several area rivers here in South Carolina and the Lowcountry that are elevated, still under those flood warnings, and I noticed that you guys have us under a moderate risk for flooding this spring. I guess if you can explain maybe a little bit more some of the concerns that you have for our area, particular here in those areas that were affected by the flooding back in October.
I'll go ahead and continue to address that. This is Todd Hamill at the Southeast River Forecast Center. As you mentioned before, you know, it takes time for – we've had, you know, as you mentioned, numerous rainfalls over the last couple of months, and it takes time for that water to get through the system and get closer to the coast. And so, as you mentioned, you know, many of those reservoirs have held some of that water and slowly released it so that we've had elevated levels, but it hasn't kept it in, it's kept it in just minor flood during a lot of those times. So because of that, and we still have some, you know, still have the potential of getting heavier rainfall in some of those areas, we could go back into having an opportunity to have elevated reservoir levels and potential for flooding, especially as we move, you know, in a lot of those coastal areas. So so that's the reason that we continue to have the high potential. And as I mentioned before, because of the dryness in the last month, that's helped things a great deal. So that it's not as bad as it would have looked early in the season, but it doesn't look nearly as bad, but it still has the potential for having moderate flooding, especially along the coast because of all the rain we've had in the last couple of months.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one, and record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, thanks, Karen. So thank you, everyone, for joining the call today. Again, we have a news release summarizing the spring outlook that's up now at NOAA.gov. We understand that there's a problem in the link to the okay, we got it fixed.
So on the news release, you'll see a map that shows the U.S. spring flood risk. There's also a very interesting map associated with the news release showing the difference in snowpack in California between 2015 and 2016. At the bottom of the news release, we have links that have the background information for the flood risk, as well as the temperature and precipitation outlook and maps associated with that, and the drought outlook. If you have further questions, feel free to call me. My name is Susan with NOAA Communications, and my number is 301-427-9000. 301-427-9000. And thank you again for joining us today.